Hello, guys.
Hey.
Welcome back to Wokeland.
Welcome back.
The Simones are here live and direct.
We in the building.
Hey. I'm Elsa.
And I'm Anayo.
And we are the Simones. Coming back at you. This is episode 3 now.
Yes.
I cannot believe.
We dropped that hella unplanned episode a few days ago.
Oakland to Wakanda?
Yeah.
Wakanda to Oakland.
Yes, that y'all should definitely check out. We talked about the Black Panther movie.
African booty scratches.
Yes.
Y'all, how reckless were we on that episode? Be honest.
Right.
It was like midnight. We didn't know what we were saying. Apologies. I was getting out of Nio.
Right. She should apologize.
I was getting out of Nio. I was cranky. I was tired.
Right.
It was just so much to talk about. But anyway, thank you for staying live with us and, yes, and hanging on till the third episode. This is a very special episode. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, let's talk about our Wokeland launch party.
Yes.
That happened in January.
Which happened, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, a month ago at
about
this point.
Month.
Yeah.
About a month ago.
Right.
It was, I mean, I feel like it happened yesterday.
I know. I feel like it happened a couple weeks ago, like a week ago.
Where, I mean, genuinely, yeah. You guys, thank you so much.
Thank
for
you,
showing
thank you, thank
up
you.
And showing out the yeah. way you did. We cannot tell you guys just how full of just gratitude and love and, I mean, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. And just like planning that party, because we were planning everything at the same time, you know, so we're planning the first episode, we're getting that ready, we're trying to get the website together. We actually forgot about the website. I'm going to be 100% honest with y'all.
Oh my God.
Like,
no, she didn't.
We, an hour before the party, forgot about the website. Shout out to our friend,
Leanne.
I hope you're listening. She put that website together so quickly. So we had a place to host the episode.
And she actually flew out from New York City to be mm-hmm. at our launch party. So shout out.
And she's the founder of Boss Magazine. So check her out. Boss, B-A-U-C-E. But yes, the party was, you guys really came through. Oakland locals were in the house. Everybody was there. Like, people from Oakland, not from Oakland. Like, old, young, different classes, different ethnicities. It was just a beautiful mix of people, and we are just so grateful that you guys came out to support this launch, because, you know, this podcast is for y'all, and it's for the city of Oakland and the Bay, and, you know, just your attendance, your support meant so much and validated what we're trying to do here.
Exactly. It was such a warm reception to the idea, and to us. I mean, 90% of the people that showed up, we didn't know you guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And we hadn't really.
You, and now we know you.
Exactly. I mean, now we're family. Now we're now we're besties. Mm-hmm. So we have a totally different relationship now. But we didn't have much of a social media presence at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think we had photos of us up on there, which was deliberate. I didn't want that. But
yeah.
You know, Naya was getting at the kid for it. But whatever.
Yeah.
I digress.
There's a few photos of us now, but you still have to find them. But
against
exist.
My will. But it was just, but it's just a true testament to the spirit of Oakland and mm-hmm. looking for culture and looking for findings and truth and just support. There's no place like Oakland that can give or garner that kind of support. So
mm-hmm.
thank you. We should shout out Soul Space.
Yeah, shout out Soul Space, Jeff at Soul Space. Who,
DJ Red Corvette,
our homegirl.
Women in Music, shout
yes,
out to you.
She is the co-founder of Women in Music Festival, which is happening again this year in April, their second annual. So check her out, check them out.
Zaytoon.
Oh my God, shout out Zaytoon.
For the food.
Vivian specifically from Zaytoon, she really hooked up the food and the drinks, and Sydney the bartender on the drinks, everybody that helped, our girls at the door.
We were so stressed.
Yeah.
So overwhelmed. Y'all don't even know, man.
Yeah.
Maybe in a later episode, we'll talk about, like, what happened 30 minutes before we left the house. You know what happened.
Yeah. I'm going to just tell y'all briefly right now, because I know you guys are mad at us for not, you know, telling you guys who what the Simones means. So we'll just tell you right now what happened 30 minutes before the event. Basically.
Right.
My car was in the process of being towed. This is 30 minutes before the event, y'all.
You guys, we can't make this up.
Like, not even making this up. We're scrambling to put the website together, scrambling to get ready, get all the materials, and boom.
We have no makeup on. We're not dressed. We're right. In our PJs, hair looking crazy, dusty, crusty, and rusty.
And I look outside, and I like, actually, I think no, you looked
me. Out. I was on the phone because my friend said she was, our friend said she was parking. So I was like, okay, great. We got an extra person. Mm-hmm. She could help us, you know, carry the shirts. I look outside, and I'm talking to her. I was like, oh, I think Anaya's car getting towed. And I was like, Anaya, is this your car? She slides through, and she was like, oh, my God, that's my car. She runs outside. And it's not like they're just putting on, like, the hooks or the chains onto the car. This man is already in his vehicle about to drive off.
Yeah. So if I, like, in, like, if I had, if Elsa had seen that maybe 2 or 3 seconds later, it would have been a wrap. My car would have been at the tow lot. I would have paid crazy money. I did have to pay crazy money either way because, I guess, you know, when you're about to get your car, when you're getting your car towed, it doesn't matter. Once they put the hook on your car, it doesn't even matter if your car isn't on the ramp yet. Once they put the hook on your car, you're done. Like, you gotta pay.
But so. Tell them where did you park though?
I parked. Okay, so we have a crazy neighbor, and let's not get into this too
let's
deep.
Let's not do that. Don't. Can we take a photo of the spot of the space that you try to fit your car in and then just post it and see if people feel okay? Like,
well,
park there.
We'll post a photo and you guys can let us know if we're supposed to park there.
Either way,
but either way, came. Yeah, it was a whole thing, but it's fine. We made it to the event. Y'all were on CPT time anyway, so it was good. And we got it cracking, and yeah, like over 70 people showed up.
That's crazy.
And
our shirts sold out.
Yeah, we sold out of shirts.
Oh my God.
And we're gonna get more shirts on the website soon, so stay tuned because you guys have been asking for those. But yes, anyways,
thank you so much.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
More events to come.
Yes.
But that is not what this episode is about
at all. So forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we said that. So, episode 3, what are we talking about? We are talking about a man's journey, specifically a man named Jabali.
Yeah, Jabali. Well, his name is James.
James.
But he goes by Jabali. But he is what you can call living history.
Absolutely.
And no joke, he is... basically a member of an original member of the Black Panther Party. He was a rank and file member.
Yeah.
And, you know, out here in the Bay Area he was in the San Francisco chapter, correct?
Yeah.
In
the Fillmore, I think. Fillmore neighborhood, I think you said.
Yeah.
And actually, if you were at the launch party, Jabali was there.
Yeah.
I think some of you got to meet him and mingle with him a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is his story. He kind of walks us through his day-to-day, how the Black Panther Party found him, what times looked like when he first joined, how he was impacted and influenced by the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X, and then, of course, the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of set the scene for what Oakland and San Francisco, Richmond, looked like at the time. And, of course, we were not there at the time. So it's crazy to not read this in a textbook or in a history book. Of course, history doesn't really talk about the Black Panther Party too invasively.
Yeah.
But
they want to erase that.
You know how they do. But, you know, it's not something that we read. It wasn't a documentary. This was a man live. This was, like you said, this was living history.
Yeah.
Someone actually speaking to someone who's still alive to speak about all the things he saw. I mean, he was alive when Martin Luther King was assassinated, when Malcolm X was assassinated. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, it was just awe-inspiring. Wasn't it?
And it's just, we were very fortunate, you know, to be able to hear him speak his truth.
Yeah.
And him being so open with us.
Yeah.
And just, you know, even when we met him, he, you know, took us around Oakland and showed us a bunch of the original Black Panther hangouts, the headquarters. He gave us, some histories on how, you know, Oakland has changed. Like, for instance... Merritt College used to be over there more by North Oakland, and then they actually moved it up into the hills so that, you know, kids in the hood they were going to college. They were going to Merritt College because it was right there. You know, you
could, it was accessible.
Yeah, it was very accessible for local kids to go to Merritt College. And so they were going, they were getting their education. And in his words, they moved it because, you know, too many brown kids, too many black kids was getting educated. So they moved it up into the hills where it's now, you know, not as accessible to people like us, people who look like us. Mm-hmm. And who knows what the bureaucratic, you know, federal reasons why it was moved. But, you know, this is someone who lived in that time and saw these things change and saw how, you know, the demographics were moving. And, you know, so from his own mouth, you know, it's just great to be able to hear someone who was there, someone who was in it, someone who was fighting for these issues at the time it was happening.
Yeah.
And hear it from his mouth. So
a real life hero.
Yeah.
And he was, as Anayo said, very open, very honest, mm-hmm. and very gracious about it, but also very lighthearted and funny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got to joking about a couple of things,
yeah.
too.
So it turns up, yeah. y'all. You guys are going to want to listen to this. It turns up. Yeah. He gets into it.
Jabali, thank you so much for giving us the space and yes. the time to do this episode with us and sharing that bit of history. So here is his story. We hope you guys enjoy it. It is Thursday, 6:24 p.m.
Okay, Siri.
It's important to know these facts, right? All these things matter. Dates, times.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Nothing, this is a historical nothing. Moment.
It's a historical right. moment. It really is. I don't think many people are privileged to be in the position that we are today. Anayo, do you want to say why?
Why? Because we are in the presence
yes.
of a historical figure.
Yes.
Part of a historical party. Someone who fought, was present in, you know, Black liberation's biggest moment and biggest, like, movement, the Black Panther Party and mm-hmm. the Black Panther movement. So we're sitting here with Jabali.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for kicking it with us.
Thanks for hanging mm-hmm. out.
Thanks for inviting me.
We have spent some time together, actually, over the course of the last mm-hmm. month or so. We were at the lake. When was it? Was it early January?
Yeah.
And you said something mm-hmm. very profound, and maybe it's best that we start with this. You said, when you reach the end, you go back to the beginning. I'm paraphrasing, but you said something like that. I don't know if you remember. It was right outside of the bakery in Oakland, actually. What was the...
It's all good.
Oh, yeah, when we were over by the headquarters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you seem to be yeah. reminiscing and looking back on your life. So that stuck with me. So let's take it back to the beginning then, in your words.
Okay, how far you want to go back? Well, I'll do a brief intro.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, my name is... my government name is James C. Burford, Jr.
Full government. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. That's an exclusive.
Right. Yeah.
The only time I'm going to say it. And I was born in San Francisco, California, okay. August 20th, 1948, mm-hmm. in the Fillmore District of San Francisco. I went to school, was born and raised, and worked mostly in San Francisco, but most of my growing up and learning in life was done in Oakland, California. Yeah. Basically, lower bottom, West Oakland.
West Oakland.
And let's not forget where we currently reside, lower bottom.
Yes, yeah. West Oakland, stand up.
Hello. Yes, awesome. 1948, okay. The Black Panther Party was founded in 1966.
Correct.
What attracted you to the Black Panther Party?
Well, actually, in the beginning, I wasn't attracted to the Black Panther Party. I was attracted to Malcolm X because I had heard Malcolm X, somewhere in Fillmore. Matter of fact, it was the Panther office at the time, but I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But they used to have speakers out on the sidewalk. Everybody did. You know, the barbershop would have soul music or whatever. And the Panthers usually had somebody speaking. And this one day it was Malcolm. You know, and there's a lot of people standing there. So I kind of started listening, you know. And then it was like, wait a minute, you know, it was just like a light turned on, you know. Everything he said, it was like making sense, you know. And up until then, I really, you know, didn't listen to any speeches or anything. But it was just something about this brother who I didn't even know who it was at the time that, you know, had me listening. So
right.
I wanted to know who he was and where to find him. So I asked one of the brothers standing around, and they said, oh, he's a black Muslim. You know, and I was like, what's a black Muslim? You know, what's a Muslim? Really? Yeah. You know, and they said, well, the temple's right down the street. Mm-hmm. And they meet on Fridays and Sundays. Or it might have been Wednesdays and Fridays. Well, anyway, they met twice a week. And one of the days was Sunday. So I decided just to go down there and check them out. But at the time, you know, I didn't know that Malcolm had already been assassinated and was no longer a member of the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
But I still went, and I actually joined the Nation that same day, because, I mean, everybody there, it was just like a whole room full of Malcolms, you know, their whole attitude, the way they carried themselves, the knowledge they had, and...
How were they carrying themselves?
They weren't carrying themselves like the average Negro of the time, you know. Back then, you know... Yeah, the dudes were wearing processes. They were talking slang and chasing women. The women was wearing wigs. Everybody was high. Basically, like today.
I was like, that sounds familiar. But
just back then. Right. You know, like back then, you know, it was like you were either a Christian or in the hood. You know, it was like no in between. Either you had something or you had nothing. And most of the people in the hood didn't have that much. You know, so they stayed high and partied or whatever, you know. But the Muslims, you know, they were quiet. They were dignified.
Disciplined,
well-educated, which seems the normal. But, I mean, back in those days to see, you know, young black men, you know, standing around with discipline and speaking correctly on opening doors for the sisters, being very respectful. You know, that was like a, you know, small on him.
Yeah.
You know, he tripping, you know.
It's different.
And it just, you know, and it just kind of stuck with me. But I couldn't deal with the religious aspect of it because Christianity had already burnt me up, you know. But I still wanted to be involved, you know, helping my people. And that's how I stumbled upon the Black Panther Party.
Right.
And their rules were very lenient. Compared to the Nation of Islam. So I just slid right in.
Right.
And how old were you at this time?
I had just turned 18. Well, when I joined the Nation, I was 17. Mm. And then I turned 18 while I was in the Nation. Mm. And by the time I got to the Panthers, I was still 18.
Yeah.
18 years old.
So at that age, like, you're super young, like... You're probably still in your parents' house, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
I'm talking about nothing. You know, I was raised by my mom.
Yeah.
I had an older sister, but she had had a baby and moved out. Mm-hmm. So it was just me and my mom. And, you know, I listened to my mother. She told me, come home before the street lights. I'd be home for the street lights. Mm-hmm. Don't do this. Don't do that. So I was basically didn't know anything when I got out on the, you know, on my own.
Mm-hmm. And were you living in Oakland at this time at 18?
No, I was in San Francisco.
You were still in Fillmore.
Oh, and I had left out. When I joined the Muslims, my family put me out. They kicked me out the family.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I was like, if you were 17, 18,
yeah.
And then you joined the Nation of Islam and then the Black Panthers, I'm assuming your parents at some point...
Yeah, yeah. As soon as they were more receptive of the Panthers later on.
Okay.
But the Muslims was totally out of the question. You know.
Were they Christian? Were you guys raised?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was Christians.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I was raised a Christian. I went to church almost 7 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, that's what burned me out about it, you know.
Wow. So you're 18 years old. You had just left the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. And you are now hearing about the Black Panther Party. How did you hear about it? Were there movements that you saw? Did you hear, you know, Huey speak? Or how did you first catch wind?
I first caught wind when I was still in the Nation. because they were talking about all these other organizations that were out there, but the only one that could straighten up the black man, the black woman, was the Nation. Mm. Which they were correct at the time, because they were the ones that was getting everybody off of drugs. Mm. You know, nobody else could seem to get people off drugs, but they had a program that really worked. Mm. You know, you'd see a drug addict, and then 6 months later, he's walking around with a suit, got a business. You know, it's like, how are they doing this? Mm-hmm. But they were the only ones that were actually doing that at the time. So,
wow. So you were in the Nation when you first heard about the Black Panthers. And then what attracted them to you?
I really can't say. But basically, I had met a Panther. Mm-hmm. His name was John Bowman. We called him JB. Because we were both JBs. I had the same initials. But they called him JB. And they just called me Buford, which was Ebonics for Burford. And, okay. and it just stuck. So any Panther...
Yeah.
If you're talking about me mm-hmm. and you don't say Buford, they don't know who you're talking about. If you say James or Jabali or Burford, they don't just say Buford and they know who you are. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he was the first Panther I actually talked to. And matter of fact, he was indulging when he passed me a short bottle of wine and we was sipping it back and forth and talking, you know, and he was just... He was a ghetto philosopher, basically, because he was talking a lot of slang I didn't understand, but I could understand him to a certain extent. And he convinced me to actually come down, you know, at a later time and learn, you know, what the Panthers was doing and if I wanted to, you know, help out. So it took a while before I, you know, about a week later, I came back. I came back a couple of times, and then one day, we just sat down and started talking, and I never left.
Nice. What was the recruitment process like, if there even was one? How did that... I know I don't want to call it an interview process, but what did that entail?
Do you hate the oppression you're suffering? Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to uplift your people? Do you want to help your people? You know, it was, you know, can you... fight the fight? Are you willing, you know, to risk your life and, you know, to fight the struggle? Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, I wasn't thinking I could get killed or anything. So, right. Yeah, I'm ready. You know, I really didn't know what I was getting into, you know, but I was ready, you know, I was tired of racism. You know, back in the day, it was, you know, it was just open, obvious, you know. Fourth grade teacher used to call me nigger all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, just, but I didn't know it was an insult, you know, because she say nigger, you know, and the whole class would laugh, you know, so I laughed too. You know, I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know what was going on. Yeah, you know, and like we had a little Asian and a little Mexican, and we was always the jokes. You know, they play all these silly games, you know, calling me a nigger, her a chink, and him a wetback. You know, and we're just playing. This is how kids get raised on racism. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I'm getting carried away here.
No. Yeah, no. I mean, a lot of people think that in the West Coast, or specifically California, you know, racism didn't exist or was as overt as other places like in the South. I mean, historically, we know that a lot of people, a lot of African Americans migrated west to or north, you know, to escape some of the harsher treatment that they were receiving. But Oakland PD, San Francisco PD, Richmond PD, LAPD have historically been incredibly vicious to African-American and people of color, African-Americans and people of color. So I can only imagine what it looked like in those times, and we can argue what it still looks like now.
Yeah.
So to risk, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but to be 18, 19 years old and join such a revolutionary party that was fighting against police brutality is incredibly brave. And from the research that we've done, we noticed that a lot of the members were very young. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, I think the average age was 19 or 20 years old.
Yeah.
Going up against the FBI, going up against these local police departments.
Yeah. 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 We were kids. Because like Ducho was Reefer's father. Hmm. He was about maybe he was 31 or 32, which was seemed really old to us. You know, he was OG to us.
Wow.
You know, and there was a couple other people around his age, but everybody else was like me, you know. Yeah. Most of us were under 21.
Barely, you know, legal. Mm-hmm.
Barely legal. We had a lot of sisters who was like 13, 14, 15, wow. but they looked older, you know, so they were up there too, you know. And
do you think that contributed to, like, you know, youth and, like, you know, there's like a rebellious spirit with youth, especially at that time, like the 1960s. Like, do you think that contributed to, I mean, jumping ahead, but we'll bring it back. Do you think that kind of contributed to how maybe the Black Panther Party became a bit more radical and how radical it got later on?
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, when I first joined the party, I was just thinking local.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know what was going on in Mississippi and the Ku Klux Klan and, you know, down south and, you know, all of that. You know, I just knew what was going on. Like you said, you know, I'm from up here. I'm not from the south, right. You know. So all the racism I've come across has been in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You know, San Francisco, Oakland, Richmond, Vallejo. Right. You know, so it's like I didn't know the south was worse. How could you get worse than what I was dealing with? The only difference was out here, people wasn't getting lynched.
Yeah.
You know, they'd get brutalized, but they weren't, like, just hanging us out here like they did in the south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but police would crack your head in a minute.
Yeah.
You know, just leave you laying there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were a rank and file member, right? Correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And what does that mean? I mean, I didn't even really know until I looked that up.
Yeah.
Oh, like, that's like, you know, an army, how you have your structure, you got a sergeant, blah, blah, blah. And then the army, a private, is the lowest you could go. Mm-hmm. That's at the beginning. And that's what a rank and file was. You know, when you come into the office and then you become a member, you're rank and file. So you're starting at the bottom, which is... like, there's no Panther boot camp or anything, but, you know, the older people just take you under their, somebody takes you under their wing, good or bad, and they teach you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you learn the Panther program and whatever else is relevant at the time.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, when I joined the party, I didn't know anything. So, you know, first high, first alcohol, all that came in the Panthers.
Okay,
know.
Wow.
Oh my.
So that's kind of like you're coming of age.
Oh yeah, I'm talking, seriously, I didn't know anything.
Right.
Okay. Wow.
So when you came in and it was like, you know, someone takes you in and shows you, like, how would you describe that process? Was it kind of like, was it organized? Like, okay, here's the handbook, like, you know, whatever. Or was it like, you know, no, like, just come kick it with us and, like, watch us and how we do it. Or, like, how was the process?
Yeah, at first it was just OJT, you know. And usually, like, paper night was, like, the big night. But the Panthers had a newspaper that came out every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everybody would come to the office from Oakland, the whole Bay Area, you know, so we can mail the paper out. And that's when you really needed just people to lift and move things, basically. It wasn't too mental. It was just, we need 10 bundles of papers to go over here and 20 to go here. And then we'd box them up, take them out to the airport, and, you know, mail them out to wherever they were going. And then later on, we got more political. Mm-hmm. And most of us weren't that educated. You know, we weren't stupid, but education-wise, you know.
Like formal education.
Yeah, formal education, you know, school. Because, I mean, it was so much racism in the school, and then a lot of us had to work, or we wouldn't be eating at night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we had a lot of people from the South who weren't allowed to read or write, and they were in way worse shape than us. And that was one of the things we did start doing, is those of us that could read and write would teach the ones who couldn't read and write, which was one of my first jobs, was just, you know, showing people how to read, you know. And I was shocked that grown people couldn't read, you know, because, like I said, I was born out here.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, well, why didn't you just go to school? But, you know,
it's a different black experience.
Yeah. So then I started getting enlightened to all this other
right.
stuff that was
forms
going
of
on.
Oppression. And,
yeah. Yep. And then, you know, eventually we got more organized, you know, and more people started joining. And it was right after Huey got shot by the police. This is the actual time that I joined the party. So they were just beginning with the Free Huey rallies and stuff.
Oh, that was an exciting time.
And what year was that?
Oh, yeah, this was 66, 67, okay. 68. And then also at this time, you still had Stokely Carmichael, Rap Brown, Nation of Islam, Core, and well, the NAACP sellouts. you know, they were run by... They've always been run by white folks, right?
I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, reading right today, the president is still a white person.
Okay. Well, yeah. You heard it here on Wokeland. Heard it here first. And you didn't know.
Yeah, so
NAACP, you know, what's good?
Rap Brown, Angela Davis, Sonia Sanchez, Nikki Giovanni, all of them was around then. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you had... they had just integrated the schools in 1954 and Martin Luther King, Southern Christian Leadership. So there was a whole bunch of knowledge flowing around at that time. And then the hippies had the anti-war movement.
Yeah.
And the Chicanos had the La Raza movement. So it was a big movement.
Yeah.
It was an exciting time in the world.
So yeah, it was. Like, yeah, like those rallies, you know, I used to wonder why I was so excited and stuff. But it was it was the energy of the people, you know, like the Fermi Park, the whole park full of black people.
Yeah. Well, I think also, too, at this time, because of the Vietnam War, there was this. Even from a global perspective, there was an anti-American sentiment that everybody felt. Mm-hmm. And at home here in the U.S., everybody felt that. So whether it was the Black Panthers or you said like the Chicanos or whatever movements, people were really just uniting against the oppression, against the unnecessary evil of war. It was very anti-war across the world. It almost seemed like the world had one uniform message, and that was anti-war.
Exactly. And everybody was gravitating towards that. You know, that was unifying everybody. You know, because like blacks had their problems, the Chicanos had their problems, the Asians had their problems, the whites had their problems. And we were all fighting that. But the thing that was drawing everybody together was the war. You know, because, you know, you have your differences in organizations, but everybody was against the war.
Yeah.
So... the government knew if everybody got together, it was over, you know, and we were close, you know, we were very close.
Yeah.
Well, and the government was close to you guys, too, because
they was right next to us.
It was right there.
They was helping us plan things.
I mean, like going back to your age, I can only imagine what it's like to be facing the FBI. The what is his name? J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
You know, planting informants in the party. And this is around the time you said you joined was when Huey was just getting out of jail?
No, he had just went to jail.
Went into jail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is one of the co-founders, one of the biggest faces of the Black Panther Party. You know, one of the biggest leaders of the party being going to jail. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they were trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work. And one of them ended up dead, which they never could figure out who shot who. But they shot Huey, but they couldn't figure out who shot the cop.
What was the day-to-day duty, or what did a day look like for a rank and file at that time?
Okay, I'm going to move up a little farther down the road. Once we really got organized and started the survival programs, then we really had a schedule. So, like, the first thing would be Monday through Friday, it's the breakfast program. Right. We had the free breakfast program. And that was done through donations through from the community. Merchants would donate. And people would give money. And most of the breakfasts were held in churches because they were the only people that had a big area that we could use. you know, I have my issues with church and religion in general, but the churches in the Bay Area really helped us out because they let us use their facilities, you know, didn't charge us anything. We could just use them, you know, just as long as we kept the place clean. Mm-hmm. And then we had a couple of black nightclubs in San Francisco over in the Bayview district, Sam Jordan's. They let us use their kitchens. So first thing in the morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning, we go to whatever site we were going through and we'd start cooking, you know. I ended up being the grit man. They found out that I could, you know, burn some grit, you know. So they,
salt,
yeah,
salt
they used
or
to
sugar in the grits.
Sugar.
Okay.
Oh, sugar and butter.
I don't know anything about grits, but I just know that's a debate
I don't either.
Between.
Oh yeah,
we
down
understand
south,
that debate.
I think they don't put sugar in it. Yeah. Down here, they do.
Okay.
But anyway, I was the grit man, mm-hmm. and I was so good, I got sent around to other breakfasts. You know, they. Drive
locations.
Me, yeah, yeah, drive me around to different locations just to make
for
the grits. Yeah, I was the grit man.
Oh, grits are important. Okay.
Yeah, and we had a scrambled egg sister too.
Okay,
they wanted her to scramble the eggs. But anyway, we would do that early in the morning, and then we'd escort the children to school after that. So I'd say around 9 o'clock we'd start. Selling papers, selling newspapers, and spreading the word, you know, to the people. You know, we just, you know, you just start. We'd start on Eddie and Fillmore because the office was on Fillmore between Eddie and Ellis. So, but we'd start on Eddie, and we'd head back towards Haight Street because either way, you could go downtown or you could go uptown. Right. But either way, you know, like going right down Fillmore. It was just all black folks back then. Mm. You know, so we just start trying to sell papers, talking, you know, spreading the word. And the more, at first I was kind of shy. You know, I'd just say, Panther paper, Panther paper, get the latest Panther paper.
Yeah.
And then, but you have to read the paper too.
Right.
Because people are asking you questions, you know, because I, you know, like I said, I wasn't inexperienced. So once they asked me a question, I'd get stuck because I hadn't read the paper. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why they start, which makes sense. If you're selling something, you should know what you're selling.
Right.
You know, so after, you know, you read the paper and you get outside and you start rapping to the people, you know, Panther paper. And then you talk about whatever the headline was, the 10-point program, about injustice here in America, about Huey's situation, you know, mm-hmm. Bobby Eldridge. Because after a while, everybody was in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Central Committee, except for Kathleen.
Yeah.
Just about everybody else was in jail.
Mm. And the Panther paper was, like, the thing that, like, you know, was the popular. Like, everyone bought it. Everyone read it. That's what made you guys, like, you know,
brought
you guys some revenue.
Yeah. It brought us a lot of revenue. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, the rank and file, that was our job.
Yeah. Because
you got the paper costs a quarter and you got a dime mm-hmm. off of each paper. So you sell.
Oh, that's a good. Okay.
Yeah, that's yes,
that's
exactly.
A nice
you sell 100 papers, you got $10.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, hey.
It is 66. $10 was a
okay.
lot of money.
Yeah.
You know. And then we were in a group, mm-hmm. so like it might be 8 of us, so we had $80. Mm. You know, like on a daily basis, which was a lot back then. But it went to the you know towards rent and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think we invented a. Cooperative rentals or whatever.
I read that. Like Panther
housing.
Pads or something.
Panther pads, that's
yeah.
what we called them.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, usually a sister,
mm-hmm.
would rent a place. You know, we'd give her the money and she'd rent it. And then we'd make it into a Panther pad.
Mm.
And they had these Victorians, so and they had a lot of rooms in them. So, like, you could have 8 or 9 Panthers living in a Victorian, you know, pretty comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not pretty. Well, for those days, yeah.
yeah.
You have a little spot, a door to close, you know, and you mm-hmm. could eat and have your privacy.
Yeah.
And we went from Panther Pad to Panther Pad. You know, wherever you were that night, you just stayed there.
Yeah.
And the next morning, you start all over with the breakfast program.
Mm.
And then the weekends, you usually had the big Huey rallies, or during the week if they had a court date. And those were... a little challenging because there was a lot of people out there, but I mean the people weren't the problem. It was the provocateurs, like you said, the informants.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they were the ones out there doing, committing all the crimes.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, all the Panthers weren't states either.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to talk about the breakfast program really quick, just like, because I know that was like a big thing that the Panthers started. You guys had a bunch of programs, survival programs that you guys started, and, you know, from medical to like just education. But the breakfast program, I read that, you know, the federal government was actually trying to like discredit the breakfast program, which is a program that was feeding kids, you know, feeding children every morning before school who couldn't afford to eat. And then now you see, like, in schools, like, they have, like, you know, a breakfast program for kids who can't afford to eat. So it was kind of, like, based off of what you guys started. And like, I feel like the breakfast program, a lot of people don't realize the origins that of that and where it came from. And I feel like it was one of the more important, one of the bigger programs you guys started that was really impactful for children and making sure they ate every day.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, at the time, you know, it was common sense to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because I mean, kids got to eat before they go to school, or just eat, period, if they're going to stay home. You know, but, and, you know, like you said, the government was downplaying us for doing it, but then they turned right around and started Head Start.
Exactly.
Which was the same thing.
Because
we had Liberation School and free breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
So they started Head Start, which was free breakfast and a school.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Right.
They just called it something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I read also, too, that you guys fed an estimated like 20,000 people within the, I don't know, 8 years that the program was running.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we fed everybody. And it wasn't like just black kids from the projects. Whatever children showed up, they could eat.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the breakfast, whatever left over, you know, we ate it or gave it to other people, you know, grown-ups, locals, you know, nothing went to waste.
Yeah.
And your social services program actually expanded. So you had the breakfast program, but you also had medical services. You had testing for sickle cell anemia. You had drug and alcohol rehabilitation. So there was many different programs that were being sustained by the Panthers.
Yeah, we had free clothing. We had free groceries. You know, we had a free medical clinic. It was in San Francisco on Golf and McAllister Street. We even actually had an ambulance.
Mm.
You know, I don't know how that worked.
Yeah,
I never.
Yeah, we actually had an ambulance. And there's a picture of it if you go to It's About Time. Billy X has a bunch of historical photos on that site.
Mm.
It'll be a good site to go to. It has a whole bunch of information.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had two. We had one actual real ambulance, and then we had a like an old van that we painted up and put some lights on it. You know. And what
was
else?
It black?
No.
No.
No, it wasn't.
Nice.
This is gonna be an obvious question, but why do you think the Black Panthers were targeted or seen as such a threat by the government? Specifically,
because we were actually doing something, you know, and I wonder that too. Because I mean, because the Nation of Islam was doing a lot more financially, you know, than the Panthers were doing, but we were the number one target for some reason. I think it was because they could build up on the guns, but at the time, the Constitution said you could have a gun.
Mm-hmm. Second Amendment.
Yeah, it's right there. And that's why, you know, they couldn't do anything about it. Because it's not, if you just walking down the street with a rifle and it wasn't a round in the chamber and you wasn't pointing it at anybody, it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but think about that today. You know, like tomorrow, walk outside of BART with a rifle, you'll be dead within seconds.
Right.
You don't even need a rifle on you to be dead.
Right. No, you can just start talking crazy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, be having a medical attack or something and you'll end up dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but back then the police under certain conditions actually followed the law. And that was one of the laws that they did follow. You know, if you were following, you know, if your weapon was yours and it was registered, they wouldn't bother you.
And how did it feel to be part of an organization that was considered an internal security threat to the country?
Well, I was kind of proud of that.
Yeah, it's pretty badass, actually.
Yeah, so. Because, I mean, like I said, at the time, I didn't realize how deep it was. You know, like, I could still be in prison now. I could be dead. You know, and there's still brothers in prison that went to jail when I was 18. They're still in there now. And they were framed. You know, not that they did something, you know, and went to jail. This is just framed, you know, and they're still there right now.
How did, I guess, moving towards your time in the Black Panther Party, how did it end or come to a close, or, you know, or is it still going? Like, I know a lot of Black Panthers, you know, say that, you know, we're still in the Black Panther Party. Like, how was the transition, you know, with a lot of maybe people, you know, going to jail or people being murdered, you know, but you're still here. Like, how was that transition towards the end of the height of the movement?
It wasn't easy. You know, it was, mine personally was, I won't say it was all of a sudden, but it was like within a few months, you know, it seemed like everything just changed. You know, we had, well, what we had was we had agents in San Francisco and in Oakland, and they were causing conflicts, you know, amongst us, you know, and physical altercations came up, you know, and a little violence, but it, you know, it was like, well, it's time to go, you know. I mean, I'm still a Panther. I'm always going to be black. But it was just
can't change that.
If I wanted to, I couldn't change it. But for me, at that time, you know, it was time to get out of the party and the struggle also. So I just went underground for a few years. You know,
and I'm guessing that's what a lot of probably other Panthers did, if they could, if they were able.
That's basically. Yeah, we just went back. We call it underground, but basically you're just going back to being a normal person. You know, getting a job, you know, taking care of your family, getting married, whatever. You know, but we all still had that spirit, you know. And, you know, I would have liked to continue, but it just wasn't feasible for me to do that at the time. You know, but I still had a fire, you know, all other older Panthers have the fire still. A lot of them are Christians now, you know, and I like to...
Ironic.
Yeah, I like to rib them that, and they know not to invite me to church because they've tried that. You know, it's like, man, me and you used to... Okay.
Well, so what? Around what age was that when you guys started dissolving?
I was 23.
Okay. So from about...
What a life, man. 18 to 23.
Yeah, because I'll leave that alone.
No.
What?
All right, we'll talk.
We'll talk over here about that.
Sorry, Wogan.
Sorry, guys.
18 to 23, to be that age in the 60s, late 60s, right? To see the violence that you saw, to endure, I'm sure, some of it. How do you think that created a mindset or a framework for you later on in your life, in your 30s? Because, I mean, 30s, 40s, even still being young, you know? To see and to witness so much just hatred, so much violence, how do you think that shaped your idea of the world later on in your life?
Well, back then, you know, there was a lot of people involved. Like I said, all the coalitions and stuff.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the Panthers doing this. You know, it was everybody. And even once I got out of the party, you still had the anti-war marches, and there was all kind of other demonstrations. So I was still.
White people were going hard.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
White people were going hard.
They were going hard, especially in Chicago.
Right.
You know, they were going hard. And some of them was, you know, arming themselves and doing things, you know. And, you know.
Shout out to white people.
Hey.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And there's, yeah, and there was some people out there that was doing the thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I lost my thought.
Sorry. Okay. That's what happens. I asked, seeing all of that hatred, you know, at such a young age and enduring so much, how do you think that kind of set a framework or a mindset in your life later in your 30s or then and now?
Oh yeah, well, it taught you about racism, you know, and discrimination, and that's basically what stuck to me was mainly racism.
Yeah.
Because you can't get away from it, you know, and it's not right in your face. I mean, it's in your face, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, like down south, they got a sign, no niggas. You know, down here, you walk in Macy's, they follow you around the store. You know, it's the same thing, but it's not openly and violent. And it's worse because it's mental down here. You know, you think everything's cool,
right?
But it's not.
Yeah. And I think thinking about like now what's going on, because back then, you know, there, like you were saying, there's a bunch of these movements like the Chicanos and, you know, Black people.
Nation of Islam.
Yeah. Anti-war movements. And everyone was so mobilized. But somehow all of these movements, while they still go on today in different ways, they were all managed to be dismantled. And so when Black people try to come together and, like, you know, mobilize, somehow it gets dismantled. So I guess I want to ask, you know, seeing at what's happening, what happened then and, you know, now what's going on, you know, same thing, police brutality, people being murdered, unarmed men being murdered, women, children, movements like the Black Lives Matter movement and all these other like things that people are like kind of trying to start, but, you know, it's not really taking off. Like, I guess, what is your opinion on that? And like, what's the difference between today and then and how people were able to mobilize and like get things started, even though it was dismantled, they were able to like, you know, start a movement.
Yeah. It seems like nowadays everything plays out. You know, like, you know, Trayvon
like
Martin
trendy then,
or something, yeah. You know, when he got murdered, there was a whole movement and then it just stopped.
Right.
And then Sandra Bland got murdered. There was a whole movement and it stopped. And that's how it is nowadays. You know, like you got the iPhone. Now you're up to the 8 just in a matter of a few years.
Right.
You know, everything just changes and it's like that's how the struggle goes. You know, people like struggle for a minute and then they'll turn to something else. You know, like they had the gay rights movement and they kicked ass. You know, and they still
did.
Yeah, they did, because I remember, you know, when I was going to schools and stuff, you could damn near do anything or say anything about gay people and nobody cared.
Yeah,
you know, really, seriously. But now they running shit.
Right.
You know, they running shit.
Right.
You know, because they got organized and they put their money and their strength where their mouth was.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like we just, you know. Well, I got my own theory on what's wrong with us as Black people.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Okay.
You ready?
I've been waiting.
You've been waiting for that. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Let's go.
The main problem that Black people have is we don't have a culture. Because you always hear people saying, well, the Asians came over here, they couldn't speak English, blah, 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 blah. You know, the Germans came here, the Mexicans came here, blah, 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 blah. But all of them, they had a culture and they had a base. They had a country they were from. And they had a community they were moving into when they came here. You know, they didn't just get off the boat and just, okay, we're in America. You know, they had a culture. They had like a Chinatown or Fruitville or whatever. Okay. We got snatched from Africa way back when. Brought over here, made slaves 500 years, treated like a dog, no education, don't own nothing. Then one day, you're free. Get off my property. Where you going? Mm-hmm. You can't go back to Africa. You don't even know you're from Africa anymore.
Right.
You know, they don't, the slaves didn't know shit about Africa when, you know, when freedom came.
Right.
They didn't even know what freedom meant. You know, and it was like, okay, you're free. Get out of here. In theory, we shouldn't even be here. I mean, well, how are we still here? We didn't own shit.
Oh, yeah, you can curse.
Do what you
need
to do.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't own shit. You know, we were supposed to get 40 acres and a mule, which everybody likes to tell us. But nobody tells you that the president, right after Lincoln, repealed that. That's why we didn't get the 40 acres. And they was actually going to give it to us. But the next president repealed Lincoln's order, which when you think about it, that may be why Lincoln got assassinated. You know, if right. you want to
If you really want to talk about it, yeah.
Yeah. So our whole thing is, you know, think of your family. How far can you go back?
Well,
well, we have an interesting story.
Yeah,
a bit different.
I think for us it's a bit different just because
our parents were born in Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and
you,
so were yours.
And so were you.
Or, well, you're, not, you know,
way
some, at some point,
back when
they
some point.
Were born in Africa.
Yeah. But like, yours were born recently.
Yeah, we are like first generation. So
oh.
we can kind of be like, okay, I'm from Nigeria, I'm from Ethiopia, and go back there and see our family, which, you know, is a whole other topic. But yeah, so it's a bit different.
Okay. Well, let me break it down for you. Okay. My generation, most of us, we could go back to our great-great-grandparents. You know, that's which I could go for that far. Because when I was a baby, my grandmother, great-grandmother, and great-great-grandmother were still alive. And my great-grandmother and my great-great-grandmother were born into slavery. And my grandmother was raised as a slave. You know, so when people tell you slavery was a long time ago, you'll sit there looking at me, and I'm still alive. And they were alive when I was young, so how was that a long time ago?
Right. Yeah.
That wasn't that long ago. You know, slavery hadn't, when I was born, slavery had been over just 89 years. It hadn't even been 100 years.
Wow.
You know, so.
You are living history.
Oh, thank you.
You are. Yeah. And even when we met you a while back, you were talking about the birth certificates of, I think,
My children.
Your children. Yeah. Can you talk about what it stated on each birth certificate?
Yeah, my father's birth certificate, he was colored. My mother was colored, and I was a Negro. On my sister's birth certificate, she was a Negro. On my oldest daughter's birth certificate, she was black. My son, he was an African American. And now my children, or whatever the children I have, my latest children, they whatever they want to choose. You know, they could be black, other, whatever. But we're all from the same family, but all of our birth certificates are different.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, it's just crazy to hear that because these are the, like, mind games that were going on to like disenfranchise the black community, even things as simple as that. Like,
oh, yeah,
how do I identify you? Like, well, I like to be called African American, okay, well, you like to be called black, and then she likes to be called the person of color. Like, you know, it's just it's these like just these little disenfranchisement opportunities that were always like put
psychological
in place.
Warfare.
Yeah, and it's just like when people talk about, you know, why can't the black community do this or why can't they do that? It's because it's these, all these things put into place at the same time or one after the other contributes to what we have now, which is, you know, black people still being looked at as the bottom of the totem pole, still being, you know, discriminated against for things that, you know, other people with more privilege can freely do without any question. It's just, it's things like that that I'm just like, wow, like this was like a tactic.
Yes, you know? this wasn't no accident.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it's still going right now, you know, but back to like I was saying, okay, I don't have a language. Okay. I speak English, but English isn't my native tongue. I don't know what my native tongue is. I don't have a home of origin. Okay. I mean, I'm from Africa, from somewhere, you know, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, these DNA things I've been seeing on TV, you know, they're just robbing people. Because, I mean, with common sense, I could kind of figure out what part of Africa I'm probably from. You know, got somewhere along the coast where the slave trade was. But I'm not going to pay somebody $500 to tell me that, because you're still not telling me where I'm from. You know, I want to know where I'm from.
Like,
you know, what tribe?
Town,
what tribe am I from?
Dialect.
You know, am I from, Zimbabwe? Which part? What province? You know, who's, you know, on my bloodline, all the way back to as far as they could go. And see, we can't find that out. Just like I'll never go, I could learn some African language and claim it. You know, I could claim some city or country in Africa, but not knowing is the problem. You know, we no roots. You know, we don't have any roots. And you need roots. You can't grow nothing without no roots.
All right. Yeah.
So what's your solution then for us as young people trying to make an impact on the community? And when I say us, I don't just mean, obviously, Anaya and I.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Our generation,
people who are trying to mobilize Black people, people who are trying to fight for our cause. And whatever that may be, whether it's affordable housing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, you grew up in Fillmore. You grew up, like, you know exactly what the Bay Area looked like. Then you know what it looks like now. You probably have the best insight on what we need to do to organize ourselves, or where we need to divide and conquer in order to fulfill, you know, progress for our people. What's your advice?
Well, number one is find out who you are first. You know, like, each one of you find out who you are. Then try to find out as much as possible about your history and research. You know, I don't have to tell y'all this, but y'all out there in radio land, you know, research. Don't just Google Black Panthers and look at a couple of items and that's it. You know, research, look into stuff, look into the Jim Crow laws that came right after slavery, you know. Look at the war on drugs, you know, that the Clintons was involved in, and what Reagan did. Each president did something that kept this going, including Obama. You know, everybody want to give Obama a pass, but, you know, y'all know about Obama. But, you know, we have to learn about yourself first, you know, and then organize. You don't stop waiting for Martin Luther King and Malcolm X to come back, because they ain't coming. Now,
but why? We need them.
I mean, somebody. I'm not saying nobody's going to show. Right. Yeah, I mean, because there's always going to be leaders, you know. But it's like the leadership nowadays is not like the old leadership.
It's not. It's not.
You know, the old leadership, they didn't sell out. That's why they got killed. You know, they wouldn't sell out because they believed what they were doing.
I feel like the leadership these days, they're trying to, like, get on, like, okay, you were leading it, now you're on CNN. I'm not going to say no names, not you listening to this podcast, but...
Who are you talking about? Who is she trying to get?
Like, what's the guy who was, like, who tried to act like he started the Black Lives Matter movement? D-Ray McKesson or something?
I thought you were talking about D-Ray Davis.
No, anyway.
Well, let's say this, though. You know, let's not also, you know, there are people who have tried to make significant strides in the community, in our communities, in activism. So I don't want to say anything against them, because there are people doing the work.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I just remembered something, sure. too. Yeah.
Just not the CNN person you speak
of. I'm just, no, he can get credit, too. I'm just saying, like, that is, like, people are trying to, like, there's people who are, like, doing the work, and there's people who are trying to get put on.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of crazy to think about that Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., you know, we can name so many people, all the soldiers on the front line, a.k.a. the rank and file of the Black Panthers, mm-hmm. as well as the Hueys, the Bobby Seals, Eldridge. I don't know if Angela Davis was an official Black Panther, but...
No, she wasn't. She was drafted. Mm-hmm. Her, Stokely Carmichael, and H. Rapp Brown were drafted and given titles, but they weren't actually... You know, members. They spoke for the Panthers, but mm-hmm. they weren't actual Panthers. They, you know, they had their own organizations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The likes of Fred Hampton. I mean, all of these people were living in such a visceral and ugly time, but risked it all.
Oh, yeah.
Their lives.
And
their, you know, Betty Shabazz, Coretta. I mean, all of these people. We can even date back further. Rosa Parks. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
today, we're in 2018. I mean, are we more scared? Are we more complacent with the progress that we think we've made? Like, what is it?
Yeah, we can't even boycott Black Friday, and that's one day. Right. You know, come on. I mean, buy the stuff 2 weeks before it. If you're going to buy it, just boycott that one day.
Yeah. You know? I think there's just, like people are trying. I think there's like just too many little things like that are like happening at the same time. If people could maybe come together and organize.
Yeah, like living.
Yeah.
It's so hard to live now. That's your main focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm Black and all that, and I want people to advance, but I still got to eat.
Exactly.
You know, I need a roof.
Yeah.
You know, the economy's all screwed up, mm-hmm. you know. And one more thing. Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I know the people out there gonna be called it in.
this is a safe space, don't worry.
And they would probably comment.
I'm not gonna just hate on religion. Mm-hmm. All I'm gonna say is keep your religion private if you're a religious person. Like if to say you're a Christian and you believe in this or whatever, and I'm a Muslim, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When it's time for us to sit down to try to do something. Leave all that outside, because we're not going to agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if I'm looking at you because you're a Christian and you're looking at me because I'm a Muslim and we're both looking at her because she's something else, how are we going to unite?
Right.
We're too busy arguing because, you know, you're a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a Muslim. You know, that don't mean nothing. That's just your personal religion. And that's how I think religion should be.
Mm-hmm.
But they have organized religion to control people.
Yep.
You know, because if you watch anything, anytime anybody does anything good or big or whatever, they thank God. I don't care what it is. You know, if I hit the lot, oh, Jesus, thank, you know. No, thank me for buying that ticket that had the right numbers on it. You know what I'm saying?
I can't.
You know, because
I get
you know,
what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, like they just had the Super Bowl and all. Everybody, I want to thank the Lord. You know, like God was up there helping the Eagles win the Super Bowl. You know, that's not how religion works.
Yeah.
You know, God is not going to just personally help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he helped you to help yourself.
Right.
And, you know, lead that home, especially Christianity.
Oh, Lord.
And that's I'll be quiet.
Topic? Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Do you think our generation can band together and create or reorganize the Black Panther Party today in 2018?
Nah.
I don't know about in 2018.
I think you guys could come up with something else.
It would be something different.
We're
just
too
like
diplomatic
the Panthers
nowadays.
Mm-hmm. In the Nation of Islam. That was something else.
Yeah.
You know? So it don't have to be like the Panthers or, you know, but you guys could come up with something, but something has to get everybody together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's where you got to stop watching the propaganda, the news, you know, the news will drive you crazy, you know, and there's no good news. There's always something going on, and you got the Democrat talking about the Republican, and they're both in the same party. What's the difference? And then, okay, and there's an election coming. I got to vote for you or you. What kind of choice is it?
Yeah.
That's not a choice.
Two choices.
Yeah, that's just 50-50. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I don't like what either one of you are talking about. There should be some more candidates involved.
Right.
But they're not. And then the Electoral College picks the president, not the voters. And a lot of people don't know that either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think their vote actually counts.
Well, we saw that in the last election. So.
Yeah, it don't count as far as the president. You know, on these smaller elections, your vote counts.
Yeah.
And then you don't even know that. Because now that they're doing everything electronic, you know, they could change whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think was, where do you think the Black Panther Party could have improved?
In screening their membership.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, because there's no real screening
process. No, you just show up.
Okay.
You know, and if you look, you know, okay, and... You know, that's basically it. When I came in there, you know, he checked me out and asked me, you know, they didn't ask me had I been in jail or was all on drugs or nothing. You know,
but that wasn't important at the time. At the time, you just needed soldiers.
Yeah, what they needed at the time. Well, are you down for the struggle?
Yeah.
And that's why we had rules, you know. Have you ever seen the Path of Rules? I got a copy of it
somewhere. The 10-point
No, the rules.
The rules,
yeah.
Is that public information?
Yeah, you can find it online. I found it online. Okay. Like, rule number 3. I like rule number 3 because it says, no Panther can be drunk while on duty.
That's a good rule.
Yes. It don't say, don't get drunk.
Right.
When you're on duty, don't get drunk. And that's how the Panther rules was. You know, no chasing women on duty. No gambling.
On duty.
On duty.
You can chase the women.
Yes, you can chase women when you finish being doing your path of duties.
Yeah.
So it was like a job.
Yeah.
At first, you know, and then later on we started tightening it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, excuse me, when we first got going, you know, we were just winging it. We found out what not to do by doing it. You know, you don't get drunk on duty because so-and-so got drunk, went down here, acted a fool, went to jail. Mm-hmm. You know, so now we know, don't get drunk on duty. Don't chase women on duty. What's the name's husband caught him and beat him up on, you know. So we learned, you know, don't do those type of things.
Right.
Can you speak to the testament of Oakland? I'm going to call it the Oakland Bay Area.
Okay.
Not the San Francisco Bay Area. But the Oakland Bay Area. 510, what's up? And why do you think the Panthers grew out of Oakland? Why do you think Oakland was where the Panthers... I mean, it could have been anywhere in the country. It could have been Chicago.
Yeah,
it could have been Philly.
It
could have been New York. LA.
Yeah, because nothing starts in California.
Okay. Right.
But the Black Panthers did. Why do you think, or do you have a theory or an idea as to why?
I don't think... Well, I think it started in Oakland because the right type of people were in Oakland. You know, just like you said, somebody had to do it. And it just happened that it was Bobby, Big Man, Huey, Forte Brothers, and little Bobby Hutton that was just sitting around talking like we're talking, I guess. And one thing led to another, and they decided, you know, to start a party.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they started right over on Merritt College over there by where we went at
Is it the All Good Bakery?
Yeah, that was the office, but they started it. They actually started the party in the college.
Yeah, so the All Good Bakery was the office.
Yeah,
the first headquarters.
The first office, I believe. Yeah.
And then, I don't think a lot of people know that. Yeah, right there, Merritt College used to be
downtown Oakland.
That's Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
It used to be Grove Street back in the day.
Right. And then now Merritt College has moved up the hill to where it currently is.
Yeah, because it dawned on them. All these Black people were going to get in the college. Because you see, it was right there. You could walk to the college.
Mm-hmm.
So they put it up in the hills. Now the people in the flatlands can't get up there.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, what do you think is the... biggest misconception of the Black Panther Party from Black people?
That we were just trying to kill police just because they was the police.
Yeah. You think black people assume that mostly?
Well, not the rank and file black people.
Yeah, but like outside of the party. Yeah.
Well, back then, that was the biggest thing was the guns. Yeah. They didn't understand. And see, it wasn't the fact, you know, white people had guns. Mm-hmm. But it was, you had black men with guns. That was a problem.
Yeah, because white people hunt. Right. Yes. Don't they like to go camping?
They're the ones that made all these laws that I can walk down the street with a rifle.
Exactly.
You know, that was their law.
But it's the intimidation factor.
Right. Once a black person gets it, it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, now, you got a gun and I got a gun, we're going to have a different conversation.
Exactly.
And if you got a gun and I don't.
Mm-hmm. That really scared people. And it's like, this is a fundamental right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But we're arguing about it.
Yeah, because it's black. You know, the Constitution didn't have no... Well, it does have color in it. Mm-hmm. Y'all know that too, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, it didn't say black people couldn't carry guns. But it said, you know, that all able men, blah, 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 could have a gun, blah, blah. Okay, so that would mean an able black man could have a gun too. Mm-hmm. But back in those days, that's not what it meant.
Yeah.
But as we move forward and just reading it on face value, it just said any able-bodied man could have a weapon to protect his family in the hunt, you know, and that's was the law.
Right.
But something about black men, especially like four or five of them walking around with guns, terrorized a lot of people, and the media fed off of that. You know, because headlines, Panthers shoot cop, you know, and they go crazy.
Right.
But they didn't tell you the whole story, you know. Mm-hmm. Police kill four Panthers, shoot up their building, and one cop got shot.
Yeah. Right.
They'll just say, cop shot by Panthers.
Yeah.
Show a picture of Huey or somebody, you know, holding up a rifle, some old stock photo.
Right.
It has nothing to do with what just happened.
Old. Yeah. You know. Have you ever met Huey?
I never met him out of jail. I visited him once when he was down at Alameda County Courthouse. And it was kind of, it was intimidating, you know. And he did most of the talking.
Yeah.
You know, that's because he was the one locked up.
Yeah.
Because I really didn't know what to say. And I was looking through this little thing of glass. You know, it wasn't modern back in them days. It was like all steel with a little glass, you know, like a light switch.
Yeah.
So we're like this. And there was a little vent underneath it that you talked in. So he did most of the talking.
Yeah.
But I got to know some other leaders very well, Elvis Cleaver,
yeah,
Kathleen Cleaver.
And they established, Eldridge anyway, I know, established a chapter in Algeria, right?
Yeah, yeah, they had an international chapter over there. Yeah, Panthers was everywhere. Yeah.
North Korea, I read.
Algeria.
Even
you had
China,
Polynesian
Vietnam.
Panthers. Yeah.
Everyone hated America at the time. But that seems to be a common thread throughout history.
Right.
Yeah.
History always repeats itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, see, capitalism is the enemy. And most of the capitalists are white, so that makes, you know.
And capitalism is America's god. So.
Yes, and people don't understand how, you know, capitalism is a rat race, basically.
Yeah.
Where a few people get a whole bunch and the rest of us get whatever's left. You know, and it's just ridiculous.
Right.
Basically, because you got 1% running the whole world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So what would you say, I guess, thinking back on your time in the Black Panthers and like, or, you know, the party in general, like, how would you, like, if you could describe your time there, like, what would you say, or what was your most, like, your most precious memory of being with the Black Panthers?
Undying love for my people. You know, because it's easy to say, you know, I love all black people, and you don't.
You know. Right.
But there's a group of people, you know, like your crew.
Yeah.
That's what it was basically, you know, it was like each chapter had their own crews or whatever. You know, because I hung with the San Francisco Panthers, the Oakland Panthers, hung with Oakland Panthers. And then when we have a rally, we just be one unified group.
Right.
You know, but everybody, like, I sold papers with the same Panthers all the time. got high, chased women
off duty.
With the same guys, and mm-hmm. even today, I'm still tight. The ones that are still alive, mm-hmm. you know, we're still tight.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Excuse me.
Any last closing remarks? any words of inspiration that you want to leave?
Mm-hmm. For the youth, the young black people that are listening, the young people of color, the young people, the people that are listening right now.
Okay. If y'all gonna take me seriously.
Yes.
You have to get an education.
Mm.
Not to get a job working for somebody else. This is just for yourself. Mm. Excuse me. Just to survive. Okay. You got to get an education. Take care of your family. Take care of your people, you know, and research. Research is really, especially nowadays, because, like, you can find out everything.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having to go to the library and look in an encyclopedia mm-hmm. or a dictionary
mm-hmm.
to find out, you know, like, who was Malcolm X. Now you can just grab your phone, who was Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, don't just take the first top answer and roll with that. Do some research.
Right.
'Cause just because somebody said something doesn't mean what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they had this last season in football where they kneeling, you know, during the national anthem. Everybody's saying it was anti-patriotic and that. But how many people knew that there's four verses to the Star Spangled Banner?
Mm-hmm.
And that the third verse says it's okay to have slaves. And a slave owner wrote the Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Nobody, a lot of people don't know that.
Mm-mm.
And all you got to do is research.
Right.
Because I didn't even know there was more than one verse. As soon as I heard it, I looked it up. And right. it was four verses.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they only play the first verse.
Right. Yeah. Well, those are good, great parting words. Do your research. Take care of your family.
Stay black.
And stay black, right.
Stay woke.
Don't be a sellout.
Right.
Oh, he coming with it. Go right. ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, stay black. Don't sell out.
See, I need about 3 more hours to talk about sellouts.
We could do a part 2. Shoot.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm game. Yeah. I'll get more prepared.
Yes. Well, thank you
Start
so
naming
much.
Names.
Yes.
Oh.
Y'all better stay tuned because we got names coming, okay?
That's right. You got the Panther on the prowl.
Yes.
I like that. Thank you for your time.
Yes, thank
truly,
you.
Both serving for us in the streets and lending an ear. This is important. Like I said earlier, you are living history.
Mm-hmm.
You exchanging the knowledge and inspiring us, opening our eyes, becoming woke,
right?
Doing our research. This has expanded our research just in and of itself in this conversation and preparing for this conversation. So you are truly a hero. Thank you for the work
thank
that you,
you
do
so much.
And giving us your time. So
thank you.
Yes. And can we end on Power to the People?
Oh,
can
yeah.
we do that?
Yeah. Why not?
So we can say stay woke, power to the people.
Yes.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we hope you enjoyed the episode and Jabali's account and real life testimony to the Black Panther Party and his role as a member of a rank and file member.
Yes, yes.
I'm glad he corrected me. It is all power to the people.
Yes, all power to the people.
Because the power truly is in the people. Right. Mm-hmm. And the people are the power.
Right.
And that was a very important cultural expression and political slogan in the 60s. So mm-hmm. power to the people was incredibly imperative in the 60s into the movement, you know, and young folks really campaigning against the Vietnam War and oppression through previous generations. So I'm glad he checked me on that. I had to keep it trail one time. So.
Right. So thank you guys for listening. Next episode actually will be speaking to a female Black Panther.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to hear a different perspective on the Black Panther Party. And the best way to get notified about that is to subscribe to our podcast. So you can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts, we are there. Mm-hmm. And follow us on social media. We are Wokeland Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And of course...
I forgot we had a Twitter.
We do have a Twitter. Okay. It is not that poppin', but we have one.
Okay.
With that being said, stay woke.